This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Happy Monday, everybody. This is the Athletic Baseball Show. Tim McMaster here, along with Ken Rosenthal. Every Monday, we dive into the mailbag, and it's filled with your questions. The listeners, we get great questions every week. Ken, before we do all that, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Tim. How are you?
I am good, and in a lot of ways, I think I'm better than offense across Major League Baseball. If we look at the last week since we last recorded and some of the problems we've seen on the offensive side. On Wednesday, there were 5 shutouts across Major League Baseball. On Thursday, there were only 10 games. There were 3 more shutouts. So I guess the question is, to kick this thing off, are the pitchers just ahead of the hitters? Is this the humidors? What is going on?
Tim, we are all trying to figure out what the heck is going on. And certainly there is something going on. And already we are hearing from coaches, players and managers, that the ball is deader. They feel that almost uniformly, and when they feel that anecdotally, I tend to believe them. So let's start there, but let's not end there. Before I even get into this discussion, I should say that any analysis after 2 weeks regarding anything in baseball is a little bit preposterous. This is a long season. It takes 6 months. We've had colder weather, obviously, in the northern and northeastern climates. That contributes to diminished offense. We have another circumstance with the rosters that is also contributing. Keep in mind, right now, the rosters are at 28. Teams can use any number of pitchers that they like. It's unlimited. So we've seen 14, 15, and even 16-man staffs. Once that changes on May 2nd, when we go back to 26-man rosters and a maximum of 13 pitchers, that should boost offense. You won't be seeing a different reliever in every game of a series. You're going to have to see guys multiple times. It's going to change the entire dynamic. Also, quite clearly, the shortened spring training might be having something to do with this as well. The pitchers indeed might be more ahead of the hitters than usual. Kind of difficult to quantify that. We don't know. Certain hitters, Carlos Correa, Trevor Story, for example, had even shorter spring trainings because they signed so late. They might be getting affected too. That, of course, is just a small percentage. So now let's get back to the ball and where we are with the ball. If you remember going into last season, baseball sent out an internal memo that the Athletic got a hold of that said they are deadening the ball. And it was a minor thing. They weren't going crazy with it, but it was expected to be something that would slightly affect offense. And what happened was, with those balls, they used about half of them last year, and they used half of the standard balls. This year, they're using all of those balls that they were supposed to be using last year. So that's one thing that's going on that would seemingly create potentially a more deadening effect. You also have the issue of drag. Baseball says it can't control drag, how far a ball flies with the construction of the ball, but maybe for some reason, the way the ball is being made this year, it's affecting drag as well. And then finally, as you mentioned, Tim, the humidor. The humidor is in all 30 parks this year, not just 9, all 30. And the idea is to make the ball uniform everywhere that the game is played. What the humidor does is store balls at the exact same humidity, or exact same percentage of humidity in every park. It's a storage question. Now, in drier climates, it's going to have a deadening effect because it makes the balls moister. In more humid climates, yes, it could be the opposite effect. The balls become bouncier. But right now, in the colder weather, we're seeing perhaps a more of a dampening effect because the air is drier and it's cold, etc. So all of these things combined could be having an effect. I'm not sure, actually. No one's sure. But that might contribute to what we're seeing. And certainly we're seeing something unusual, at least based, again, on the anecdotal evidence from players, coaches, and managers. Where this all ends up, I don't know. What we do know is that baseball wants a game that is less dependent on the 3 true outcomes, strikeouts, walks, home runs, and more of a game where there is action, where the pace of action, the balls in play, is going on at a higher rate. That's been a problem the last few years, right? We've seen last year, I believe, it was 4 minutes between balls and play. That's way too much. So that is, in my view, probably the motivation for deadening the ball in the first place, kind of reducing launch angle, reducing the impact of home runs, getting hitters to the point where they need to adjust and maybe try to put the ball in play more, right? Doubles, triples, all of that. I'm not vocalizing this very well, but I think you know what I mean. And if that is the goal, that's fine. But maybe baseball should come out and say it, that this is what we're trying to do here. They kind of have said it, but they haven't said it with regard to the ball. And because every year, it seems, there's a controversy with the ball, transparency would be really welcome here. So that's my feeling as of, let's say, April 24th when we are taping. I know this podcast is being released on April 25th. Check back with me in 2 weeks. Check back with me in a month, in 5 months, when we have more data to support whatever is going on. But there seems to be, at this point, Tim, a number of contributing factors to the lack of offense, the number of hits being reduced, and home runs, of course, as well.
We'll keep an eye on it, and you mentioned Eno Saris will certainly be keeping an eye on it for the Athletics, so stay locked to him. He kind of gets all this stuff better than I think you or I do, right, Ken?
That would be correct. Eno actually understands the physics. That was one of the many courses in high school that was a little challenging for me.
All right, let's move on to the mailbag.
Hey, this is Ken. I'm not available right now. Please leave a voicemail.
If you want to get involved in the show in future weeks, two ways to do it. You can email us, tabaseballshow@gmail.com, or you can call 646-543-7072 and leave us a voicemail. Ken, before we get to this week's mailbag questions, we have to go back to one of the questions from a week ago. The question was from Tom, and he basically asked, is it time for baseball to expand the 40-man roster since we've now expanded the 25-man roster? And we said it this first month of the season, it's been expanded even more than 26, 27, 28 players. Is it time? And we had a discussion about this. Which side would be against this or for this, the union, the owners? And since then, you've gotten some more information. So go ahead and share what you've learned.
I have, and this is an interesting question from Tom from last week, and it's one that I don't believe I answered properly, and I think actually Tim had the right idea. If you recall, what I had said was I would expect the union to oppose an expansion of the 40-man roster because it would create fewer opportunities for guys that would become eligible in the Rule 5 draft, the players who are not protected on the 40-man, who get opportunities in the major leagues, however fleeting in some cases, but that is created because there is a roster limit of 40. If you go to 45, those guys are effectively swallowed into the greater number. And Tim at the time said, whoa, 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 I would think the union would want more players on the 40-man roster. And in passing days, I heard from an executive of a team who kind of explained this to me in a way that is more in alignment with what Tim said than what I said. So I'm going to read you his answer and try to follow along. It gets a little complicated with these things, but here we go. All right. He said, Ken, you're right that there is a subset of players who would be hurt by an expansion of the roster. As you said, the players being drafted in Rule 5. Because they're essentially player number 41, even though they usually have three options remaining, and another team says they've been misevaluated, we'll draft that guy and put him in the majors. Those players would be hurt by a 45-man roster because they'd be stuck in the organization that undervalues them and stunts their career. Okay, that was my point. He continues, though, but on the whole, expanded 40-man could be positive for minor leaguers. The key is not changing the number of option years. Minor leaguers on 40-mans generally make more than minor leaguers not on 40-mans, the exception being well-paid minor league free agents. So, a bigger 40-man would mean a little more dollars for some of these players and more major league opportunities for more fringe players. The biggest protection for these players is the option years. After those run out, a team has to put the player in the majors or lose him to another that will. As long as you don't mess with the option years, a bigger 40-man, more players who are on option to the minors rather than down there and not on option 40-man, that's a little confusing, could be player-friendly. It's a trade-off. But the Rule 5 guys are a small subset. This is the main point. The Rule 5 guys are a relatively small number of players. The winners would be players 41 to 45 who don't get drafted, stick in the Rule 5, and prefer being on the roster, the 45-man roster, let's call it, to being a minor league free agent in a year. I know it's a little bit complicated, but I think you can understand the point, which is basically there's a limited number of guys that get drafted in the Rule 5 draft. But if you went from 40 to 45, just as an example, well, that's 150 more players on 40-man rosters, or 45-man rosters in that case. That's significant. So I stand corrected, and I'm glad that exec reached out.
Though I will say both of our points were right. I think it's just your point affects less players than right. The other point. So, all right, that's good. And there you go. If we don't have the answer right away, we will eventually get it here on the Mailbag Show. Great stuff, Ken. All right, let's get on to this week's question. And the first one comes from Justin. He says, I was watching the Mets game just now, and they talked about the size difference of the baseball in Japan and the U.S. So we're going right back to the baseball, Ken.
Of course.
The guys in the booth also said it's tackier than the baseball used here. So my question is, what is Major League Baseball doing to create a tackier ball at the same current size if the technology is already available? Wouldn't that solve the whole spider tack issue and pitchers wouldn't have to worry about grip?
Excellent point. Excellent point. And Major League Baseball supposedly has been working on developing a tackier ball. Now, to give you a little bit of background on this, the Japanese ball dates back to 2011. Mizuno designed it. It's pre-tacked. They use this proprietary substance. The balls come in, I think, an aluminum foil package. I've actually felt them. And they're ready to go. You do not have to put any substance on them. They're tacky to begin with. Now, baseball tested these kinds of balls, their own version of them, manufactured by Rawlings, in the 2016 Arizona Fall League, and more notably, spring training 2019. And the pitchers did not like them. I don't recall exactly why the pitchers didn't like them, but they didn't. So they got bad feedback, and I remember, and I'm quoting from an article by, I believe it was Eno Saris and Brick Garoli back then, in which the executive vice president of baseball operations, Morgan Swords, said, this is going back to 2019. We've been working with Rawlings to develop a kind of pre-tacked baseball that doesn't require mud application. That is a fairly long process, one, to develop a product that is suitable, and then to get it in the hands of players and coaches to test it. Obviously, 2020, the pandemic year, put that experiment on hold, but you would think now, especially with what happened last year, with all the controversy over sticky stuff, the memos that came out, the changes that were made, they'd be working harder to get that ball. I don't know why this is so complicated. Get the tackier ball and let's go. They did it in Japan. They do it in Korea. And yet we can't do it here? It's a little bit curious to me.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Let's get it done in the next season, I would think you could get it done. Well, I would have thought you could have had it done by this season, but we will see what happens with the tackier ball. It would certainly make a lot of things easier across the game. All right, the next question, Ken, comes from voicemail.
Hey, Ken, this is Fred from Los Angeles. Love the show, guys. Keep up the great work. As I leave this message, Miguel Cabrera is one hit away from hitting the 3,000 hit mark. I'm sure he'll accomplish it maybe by the time this episode airs. My question for you, Ken, is who would you predict is the next player to get 3,000 hits? My money would probably be on Astros second baseman Jose Altuve, so he definitely has at least 7-8 years, if not more, to hit that mark. But I'm just curious, who do you think could next hit this huge statistic in sports?
Fred, great question. And in fact, The Athletic's Stephen Nesbitt wrote an entire article about this today that was excellent, really detailing which players might have the best chances and why it's going to be difficult in the future for a current player to get to 3,000, why we might not see one for a while that reaches that milestone. And Stephen detailed all of the reasons. One was the pandemic shortened year. We lost almost two-thirds of a season. And if you're going for 3,000 hits, you need every game you can play. Also, the greater number of injuries today, there are a host of factors that kind of mitigate players from getting there. The shifts, the quality of the pitching, all of the things that we're talking about that lead to reduced offense, of course, are reasons why it's going to be more difficult for players to get to 3,000. Now, to answer your question, Fred, and it's one that is fun to think about, who would have the best chance? So I looked at it kind of the way you did. The three leading players with regard to hit totals right now, Robinson Cano at 2630. This is going into Sunday. Yadier Molina, 2116. Joey Votto, 2035. Those guys are all 38, 39 years old. They're not getting there. Not even Cano, who looks like he's getting close to the end. So then you mention Altuve. Now, Altuve is fourth on the current actives. He's at 1,783, almost 1,800 hits. This is, again, going into Sunday. So almost 1,800. By the end of his age 32 season, let's say he's at 1,950. Okay. Miguel Cabrera, through his age 32 season, was at 2,331, 2,331. That's almost 400 more hits than where Altuve might be. Now, Freddie Freeman is at about the same age and about the same number as Altuve, about 60 hits fewer. And then from there, it's a drop-off. There's no one really close. Trout is at 1,428 in his age 30 season. He could end the year with, what, 1,600 or so, maybe a little bit more. Still going to be a chore to get to 3,000. So the players I look at, and let's say one of those guys that I just mentioned gets there or gets close. Okay, that's possible. But the players I look at are some of these young phenoms that we have in the game today. Tatis Jr., Guerrero, Acuna, and now Wander Franco. And I'm going to go maybe a little bit off the board here and pick up Wander Franco. And the reason is his incredible bat-to-ball skills and the fact that he doesn't walk a lot. In fact, entering Sunday, one walk the whole season. As if anybody noticed, he led the league in hits. He's going to lead the league in hits, I presume, quite a bit in his career. Vladdy does walk. Juan Soto walks all the time, of course. Tatis, we've seen the injuries take a bite out of him already, and I don't expect that he's going to be healthy his entire career. And Acuna, the same, but Acuna would seemingly have a chance because he is so productive offensively. You can't predict any of this. These guys are all young, and their careers could go any which way. But I do like Wander, because Wander is going to get a lot of hits. And granted, he's about 2,900 away from 3,000. But if I had to bet, that would be my one that I would bet on.
So maybe 15, 16 years from now, right? If he stays healthy.
Yeah. And that's kind of a long time, all things considered. We've never had that big a gap. In fact, Steven started off his article talking about how Boggs, Gwynn, and Ripken got their 3,000th in the same season. It was a race to 3,000 between those guys.
Right.
We're not seeing that now, and we're probably not going to see that unless things really change with the restrictions on shifts. Maybe pitching is mitigated somehow and offense comes back. But even then, it's hard to do. We have a form of load management in the game now where players are rested more. If you look at Miguel Cabrera's career, Tim, I advise people to look at this. Look at 2004 to 2016 games played. I believe the fewest was 150, and there were a whole lot of 158s, 59s, and 60s in there. You got to play, and it's difficult to do. It's especially difficult in the current environment.
Yeah, amazing. He played that, and he stayed healthy until right at the end of that, and then he had some injuries. But, man, what a career for Miguel Cabrera, and the 500 homers to go with the 3,000 hits. Amazing. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, next question's from Franklin. He's a Cubs fan in Richmond, Virginia. He says, I'm writing with a question inspired by last week's discussion. Ken said that the differences between the leagues is shrinking, and with increased interleague play coming soon, those differences will become all but obsolete. So my question is, With that, how will it impact the end of season awards? Baseball is unique among the four major American sports in that it has an AL and NL MVP, AL, NL Cy Young Award winner, etc. Are we trending toward a model where we would soon have just one MLB MVP for the whole league? I can see the logic behind the separate winners, given some key differences in the rules, like the universal DH. But with one gone, what is the justification for keeping separate league awards?
Franklin, I must say, and I'm going to compliment you, and I'm going to compliment a lot of our listeners. You guys ask great questions. And a lot of times, you ask questions that I haven't thought of yet. And this is one, and it's one that is really interesting. Now, we're not there yet. I'll preface this answer by saying that. We're not at the point where we're going to one league, and the discussion that we had last week about a 32-team league with an expansion of two and the blurring of league lines once and for all, 8-14 divisions geographically based. We're not there yet, obviously. But should we get there, this is a very interesting question. And we're going to get there. We're going to get to 32. Now, the question then would be, do they keep the leagues? I would say this, that if you go to one league MVP, you're going to have a fight with the union to some degree, or at least a discussion with the union. I don't know if it'll be a fight. But keep in mind, players have all kinds of incentives tied to MVPs and Cy Youngs and all that kind of thing. And if it's 50% tougher to win one of those awards, then obviously that's going to have a huge effect on some of the things that are put in their contracts. So that would have to be a discussion, and I'm going to follow up on this question this week, much as I followed up on the 40-man question last week. Actually, I didn't follow up. Somebody reached out to me. But this is something that is worth asking. Now, the answer I'm going to get, I'll guarantee you, is, Ken, we're not there yet. We have not discussed this. This is all a hypothetical discussion. Yes, it is a hypothetical discussion. But at the same time, it's a discussion that they're going to need to have, and it's definitely worth asking about. So I appreciate the question very much.
All right, Jim says, as a way to speed up the game, how about limiting the number of pitchers active for a given game to the starter plus five more? If the game goes into extra innings, another pitcher could be activated. I think the length of the game and the lack of action is directly related to the number of pitching changes in a game. The three batter minimum seems to have had little effect on the time or pace of the game.
This is an idea that is sort of just a different version of maximizing the number of pitchers on a roster, right? So we're going to go to 13-man staffs starting May 2nd. That's the rule for this year, and I expect going forward. That effectively limits the number of pitchers that will be used. Not in the same way, not putting an absolute restriction in a given game, which I'm not so sure I would like anyway, because each game is different. There might be a day where, hey, you want to use a bullpen day and employ your staff that way, use seven or eight pitchers. This has happened. We've seen it. It can be effective. So the 13-man staff, yes, that would make it more difficult to do one of those days I just discussed, but it's the same idea. I think we're going to the same place, essentially. I just wouldn't want to put the individual restriction on a game. That, to me, would be a little bit too much.
Yeah, especially you're thinking lefties and righties and how many of each you would want to use in a game. Man, managers would have their work cut out for them. That's for trying to
they would.
Those five relievers every day. Or the front office, I should say, would be in on that discussion for sure. All right, John wants to know, it seems that the knuckleball has gone the way of the dodo bird. All right, John says, it seems that the knuckleball has gone the way of the dodo bird. I don't think there are any true knuckleball pitchers at the major league level right now. Do teams no longer consider the knuckleball a viable option for a pitcher, even as a secondary pitch? If a team had a knuckleball pitcher on the roster, they could use him as an emergency starter or in long relief in a blowout to prevent a team from burning out the bullpen. The pitcher doesn't have to be a Tim Wakefield or R.A. Dickey, but I'm surprised that teams don't consider this option.
John, another great question. And as far as I know, there aren't any knuckleballers, at least big prospects, in the minors either. Now, there might be one or two, maybe even more, floating around, but it's not like I've heard of any of these guys getting imminent promotions, if they even exist, if the species is still with us. So I don't know why they've gone out of favor. Clearly, the knuckleball is not a pitch that necessarily factors into analytics very well. It doesn't really fit that whole thing. We're not talking about spin rate. Actually, the lower the spin rate, the better with the knuckleball. We're not talking about pitch design. It's a knuckleball. So that might be part of it. The other part, and this is always something that was problematic, the idea of finding a catcher who can catch the knuckler. So it effectively forces you to carry that type of player. And there weren't many. Remember years ago, and Tim, you'll probably remember his name because you're a Red Sox fan, when the Red Sox had this catcher flown in for Wakefield. I should remember this myself. And he got like a police escort from the airport. It was ridiculous. It was complete eyewash. But it showed the importance of getting the proper catcher to the ballpark. I can't remember his name. I wish I could.
Mirabelli, right?
Was it? That's it. It was Mirabelli. Yeah. Yes.
Because Jason Veritek, people learned in the playoffs that he could not catch a knuckleball.
Right. And Mirabelli got this police escort. It was absurd in my view, but, you know, hey, whatever. And it showed how important it is to have the proper catcher. So I'm not sure of the answer. I actually reached out to one of the more prominent former knuckleballers, but I've not gotten an answer yet. If I get an answer, next week's mailbag.
It is the one thing I think about is like Tim Wakefield was a first base prospect, right? Or hitting prospect. His career fizzled. He figured out he could throw a knuckleball and the rest is history. It's like knuckleballers come out of weird places. It's not like they're drafted or they're signed. So I don't know. Maybe one will pop up, but yeah.
Well, R.A. Dickey, remember, he lost his ligament.
Oh, right.
And or he didn't have a ligament and he became a different pitcher. So you're right, Tim. It is born out of necessity often, but it just seems to me in today's age, an analytics department wouldn't know what to do with a knuckleballer. I mean, I'm sure they could figure it out. And I'm sure it would fit fine, but it's not the classic mold. It never has been. And particularly in this day and age when everybody's throwing 98, I don't know that we'll see it again.
I wonder how the humidor would impact the knuckleball, because some of those guys were always bad indoors or bad outdoors. I don't know. Anyway, moving on. Next question's from voicemail.
Hey, Ken, this is Reggie from Austin, Texas. My question actually is inspired by a newsletter I read this morning. The observation that was made is that in the last 10 to 20 years, all the advances have been on the pitching side of the game, and nothing has basically been done to advance the cause of the hitter. Banning the shift is something that really doesn't address the real issue, which is the type of pitches that hitters now face, and that unless something is done to make the pitching more difficult for the pitcher, that the offensive difficulties for most hitters will continue. And I wondered what your thoughts were on that. I do think a pitch clock could help.
Reggie, great points. And yes, a pitch clock could help. Restrictions on shifts could help. Maybe even an automated strike zone could help as well if they adjusted the strike zone to a place they thought MLB officials that would be more conducive to offense. All of these things probably are in play because of that very reason, right? All of these things that we discussed at the top of the show and that we continue discussing as fans and observers of the game. The one point I would not completely agree with is that all the advances have been on the pitching side. Now, certainly, the advent of driveline, the focus on analytics and TrackMan and all of the things that have come into play with pitch design, the different technological uses that some of which I mentioned, all of these things, yes, they are advantage pitcher. But we've also seen the launch angle revolution, the adoption of techniques by players such as Justin Turner and JD Martinez. It's not quite the same, but they've adopted too. And they figured out certain ways to combat all of the great pitching advantages that they face. It's not perfect. Offense is down. We know that. But at the same time, hitters too use a lot of technological things that they didn't use in the past. I wrote a story about Matt Carpenter a couple of months ago about how he went in search of a bat, a change in his bat that he felt would help him become a better hitter again or become more of the hitter he used to be. And other hitters more prominent than Matt Carpenter have done the same thing. They've gone to places where they've had certain measurements taken and adjusted their bat size and different things along the way because of that. So the technology is helping both sides. I would say, though, that you're correct. Probably more of an advantage to the pitchers, or at least they've had more tools at their disposal than hitters in recent years.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
All right, Ken, final question comes from Chris, and it's about what's going on in Cincinnati. He says, just wondering what your thoughts are on Phil Castellini's comments that he made at the Reds' home opener. Seems ownership is out of touch. Now the Reds have lost every game so far since those comments as of today, 4-19, and I will add that they just snapped an 11-game losing streak as we record this on Sunday. Ever since then, I haven't really watched the Reds and their my hometown team. Is the turnover in the front office causing some of this instability and lack of a plan? They've had three GMs in a matter of the last several seasons, from Jocketty to Dick Williams and now Nick Kroll.
I'm not going to blame the GMs here. And the reason I say that is precisely because of the first part of your question, Chris. It's the ownership. And Phil Castellini being an ownership representative, the son of the owner, his comments, what he said on opening day, how basically people can go somewhere else. Really, that's very nice. And it kind of speaks to the antitrust issue. And there's a bill in Congress right now. I don't expect it to go anywhere, but they're looking at, again, lifting the antitrust exemption. I don't know why baseball is the only sport that has one. I understand the reasons historically, but if you look at it, there's no reason baseball should be treated differently than the other sports. And if you lift that exemption, there's more competition. And then if an ownership representative like Phil Castellini says, where else are you going to go? No, maybe you can go somewhere else. Maybe your team leaves. Maybe you have another team set up shop in Columbus. Who knows? All kinds of things necessarily could take place. Probably would have a bigger effect on the minors and the majors, but I'm getting ahead of myself. The owner is the problem here, not the GMs, Jocketty and Williams and Kroll. They, like any GMs, have had their ups, they've had their downs, but this is an ownership that has basically given everyone whiplash with the way they've run the team the past few years. Spent a lot a couple of years ago on Castellanos, Moustakas, etc. Tore it down this year. Where are we, guys? What are we doing? And those are the fair questions as this team goes forward. So I wouldn't put this on the GMs. They're operating under difficult circumstances. They're not perfect. I get it. None of these guys are. But when you have this kind of whiplash from the top, it makes things a lot more difficult.
Certainly does. And there's certainly a group of teams that we could throw into that boat with the Cincinnati Reds around baseball that could use some new ownership. All right. That's some great questions. Again, as Ken mentioned, you can get involved for the next show. The number is 646-543-7072, or you can email us at tabaseballshow@gmail.com. Next up on the feed, Starkville, of course, on Tuesday, and a timely guest after Miguel Cabrera picked up hit number 3,000 over the weekend, Dave Dombrowski, who drafted him with the Marlins and then traded for him with the Tigers. Dave knows all about him, and now, of course, with the Phillies. So a lot to talk about with Dave Dombrowski. Check out that one, and then we'll be with you all week long, 5 days a week here on The Athletic Baseball Show. If you want to subscribe to The Athletic, no better time to do it. $1 per month for 6 months to join The Athletic right now. You get all the great writing on the baseball side, the football side with the NFL draft coming up this week, and everything in between, NBA playoffs. So get on involved with that. Go to theathletic.com/baseball show. Ken, great stuff as always. Have a great week.
You too, Tim. Thank you.
And hope everybody out there has a great week as well. We'll talk to you again next time.